Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:45 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is November 24th. I thought we'd kick off with gold. It was down a dollar today and coming back into the region of the sequence of higher reaction lows that's been holding now for most of the last 7 or 8 months. But nonetheless, there's still the medium-term sequence of lower rally highs. And we've had a succession of big downward dynamics from each one of those lower highs. So this week has presented the most recent of those. Of course, the price could yet rebound in the next couple of days and certainly moderate the weekly downward dynamic. And it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that that might occur, because we're still in this consolidation phase. And these types of lengthy consolidation were de rigueur during the last big bull market, and they lasted for anything up to about 18 months. The common characteristic of each of them was that they were completed in the September or October of uneven years, and that isn't going to happen this year because we're already in November, and at the end of November at that. But the big question then is, well, what is the big motivating factor behind a gold bull market? And primarily, it's about the inability of governments to follow through on their intentions to normalize policy following a crisis. So that's pretty much what we had after the busting of the TMT bubble in 2000 and then subsequently 9/11 in 2001. So central bankers panicked. They cut interest rates to the bone. And then they also were reluctant to remove the accommodation. They didn't begin to raise rates until 2003. The stock market had continued to go down after 9/11 for another year or more. So they had rationale for delaying that decision. And of course, on this occasion, you've had the pandemic and the massive response and the panicky environment that we had in 2020 and this incredible acceleration of monetary accommodation. They had already been cutting interest rates ahead of the pandemic because they were worried about a recession. A lot of the conditions that one would look for ahead of a recession were falling into place. So gold had already started rallying in 2019, and it was on the cusp of breaking higher in early 2020 ahead of the pandemic. And a good part of the reason for that was because of the impending recession, and also because of the quantity of money that was being printed, and the reluctance of the Federal Reserve in particular to continue to raise rates in 2018 because they were worried about a 20% pullback on the stock market. We just had one in 2018, and as soon as that was dealt with and the Federal Reserve started cutting interest rates again, gold started to take off. Well, we have a strong stock market now, and obviously that changes some of the rationale from the perspective of the Federal Reserve. It's not like 2002. So they're starting to think about how they can raise rates, and they want to be flexible, and that's quite normal. So the market is beginning to price in the potential that they will accelerate the pace with which they're removing or reducing the number of bonds they're buying on a monthly basis. And that would then also accelerate the timeline for when they may begin to raise rates. So that's part of the reason why gold was weaker in here this week. But then we also come up against the reality that there are large segments of the stock market that are extraordinarily interest rate sensitive. And we're in an environment right now where the 10-year yield is at the upper side of the most recent portion of the short-term range. So it's testing the peaks from back in October, and that wasn't all that far away from the peaks from back in April. And on the one hand, people are arguing that the Federal Reserve has to begin to raise rates because There are some signs of bubbly activity, and on the other, there and of course, the reality is that because there are so many of these companies don't make any money at all, or that they are trading on extraordinary leverage, that any real move in yields is going to have a material impact on their ability to survive. And the loss of a significant portion of those companies would have a knock-on impact on some of the big data warehouse providers. And obviously, those are the largest companies in the world. And that could then have a knock-on effect on the wider economy. So, what happens in terms of interest rates is going to be a material event in the face of this question about inflation. So, obviously, the central banks want to normalize interest rates, and the degree of leverage in the market is going to inhibit that ability. Now, when we go back and think about 2018, a 10% pullback on the stock market was not enough to derail the quantitative tightening program in 2018. They needed a 20% pullback, and then they started cutting rates. So then we can think about what's going on in terms of the NASDAQ 100. Because the NASDAQ was in positive territory today, and it remains in a reasonably benign environment overall. Now, we've had three ranges, and each of these ranges has encountered resistance at a round number, so 12,000, 14,000, and 16,000. And we've had pullbacks in the order of about 2,000 points. So, if the trend is going to remain consistent, then it will persist higher, and it will not pull back in a meaningful fashion below the peak put in just in September. The next area of potential resistance would be around 18,000, and subsequently a pullback of around 2,000 points wouldn't be certainly wouldn't surprise too many people. And if this trend is consistent, and a consistent trend is a trend in motion, and the imbalance between supply and demand that's animated this advance since March of 2020, if that's still intact, then we'll continue to see a trending, consistent environment. Obviously, we have this big question right now about whether the Federal Reserve in particular has the real intention of raising rates. Now, they're certainly doing a good job of talking about it. But if the stock market begins to lose consistency, then that's going to delay the timeline for raising rates. And of course, then that would help to support markets. The one thing that I find rather interesting, right, more recently, has been the willingness to talk about bubbles. But I was looking at Shiller's multiple site today because I was looking at the S&P earnings, and they're at the new all-time high. Back on Black Monday in 1987, earnings had been trending downwards, but the stock market had been trending higher. So we're still in an environment where earnings are coming in strong. And when we look at companies like Deere, well, those are the kinds of companies that they prevail in an infrastructure-led recovery. And they've agreed to some very generous pay demands from the union. And the company is floating on a free cash flow yield of 3 or 4%, and is coming in at or I guess about 4%, and then free cash flow of about 5 billion. They're going to be spending an additional 300 million a year for the next 5 years on wages. So these are very significant increases. And of course, it's then dependent on the company to continue to deliver on sales in order to be able to absorb that wage increase. So the share continues to do well because they're predicting better sales. Then we had the other side of this equation in here today, where we had Best Buy reporting earnings, and there was a downside surprise because the share having done so very well over the last couple of weeks has pulled back abruptly on losses taken from theft. And this is, I think, something that we do start need to start paying attention to, because portions of the global economy are becoming ungovernable. And there's a real question about the rule of law. And this is, I think, going to be an increasingly powerful electoral motivation for a large number of countries. And what we saw in here today was that the right-wing party, well, it was yesterday in Chile, they were successful in getting around the or getting into the second round of the presidential election, running on a crime and immigration ticket. So the Chilean peso is right in the region of the lows from back in 2020, and the iShares Chile ETF is in the region of its lows as well. So then this, I think, also helps to highlight the fact that the US dollar is the linchpin in terms of the ability of the Wall Street indices to continue to attract capital. So the dollar is now breaking higher and is tacking on 3 consecutive weeks on the upside. So there's a short-term overbought condition evolving, but it's a very clear rebound from the lower side of the range. And any question about whether that was a short or a medium-term low earlier this year are now dispelled. So this is a very clear breakout, or excuse me, break higher and rebound from the lower side of the range. And the next area of potential resistance is around that psychological 100 level. As long as the dollar continues to advance, then it's going to represent a significant tailwind for US dollar denominated assets. And that, I think, is also important in terms of the gold price. It's important in terms of bonds and stocks. And then we can think about the currencies that are depreciating. So the yen was weak again in here today. This is increasingly looking like a trend. And Japan has no intention of raising rates or abandoning their yield curve control mantra. Now, the Nikkei was in negative territory today, and it took its lead from Wall Street yesterday. It's likely to be in positive territory tomorrow. The Hang Seng, and it's expanded more recently for more members, and it's weaker, but at least holding the lows from 2 weeks ago. And the H share index has been at the lower side of its range and was also weaker in here today, but it will really need to sustain a move below the 8,000 level in order to question support building in this area. The big question for China is around the ability of the property developers to continue to rally. And we've had a couple of big upward dynamics, and the big question now is, when will the credit impulse turn? There's certainly the potential that China is going to have to intervene and supply additional liquidity. So far, they've been willing to do the bare minimum. That's at least allowed the currency to remain quite steady against the resurgent US dollar. But then, when we start to marry up some of the weaker currencies with the stronger currencies, well, the renminbi is surging higher against the euro. And it's now as strong as it's been since, or it hasn't been this strong since at least early 2017 or into 2016. So that's going to enhance the competitiveness of European exports into China. And Of course, that's a very significant market for a large number of European businesses. So the Euro Stoxx index is continues to unwind a short-term overbought condition, but it remains in a benign environment overall, and it's certainly being helped along by the weakness of the currency, because if we were to redenominate it into US dollars, well, then it looks like a very different environment, and really coming now back into the region of the trend mean and hadn't been able to break out at all. So this currency question is an awfully big one in terms of attracting foreign capital, because certainly Europe is beginning to, or it should start to benefit from the weakness of the currency, and particularly in the competitiveness of the exports. And that's equally true for Japan. And of course, if Japan's currency is trending lower, well, then the potential is that the Korean won will also have to trend lower, because they basically compete for the same markets. So when we think about where are the most attractive assets, Wall Street is still winning that race because of the strength of the currency. And then, of course, the strength of the currency is based upon the assumption that the Federal Reserve will raise rates and normalize policy before everyone else. And ultimately, that question is going to come down to the health of the stock market and the health of the broader economy, which is extraordinarily interest rate sensitive. We're in an environment where we have competitive currency devaluation, and right now, everywhere else is trying to devalue faster than China and the USA. And the USA and China are facing off against one another, and it's really a game of chicken. So now the big question is, which one is going to break first? Because I remain very much of the view that it's going to be extremely difficult for the Federal Reserve to raise rates. I also believe that it's extremely difficult for China not to devalue the currency. So we're in an environment where there's two major powers are trying to exude strength, whereas everyone else wants to devalue the currency in a hurry. And of course, Jamie Dimon saying that he thinks that JP Morgan will last longer than the Communist Party, that's obviously not helping. When we think then about some of the commodity-related currencies, the Australian dollar has pulled back all the way to test the lows from early October and August. So it's a little oversold in the short term, but it certainly needs to do more and start putting in upward dynamics in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And oil prices were also a little weaker in here today, but not certainly not in a dynamic manner. And this continues to look like a reasonably benign environment where we've had a dynamic rebound from the region of the previous peaks. And I think that this effort to try and reduce energy prices is doomed to failure, because the major consumers are simply not in a position to go toe-to-toe with the largest producers. And gasoline prices pulled back mildly over the course of the last few weeks and were up in a reasonably dynamic manner this week. But it looks like an uptrend, and until it sustains a move below 200, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And then, of course, we have extremely cold weather in Europe right now, and then because of that very cold, frosty weather, there's no wind. And together, that is contributing to massive additional demand for coal-fired power stations. And the credit markets, it's the carbon credit markets, are surging higher. So it's up now to 73. And this is remain or it remains a an accelerating trend, and it's politically motivated. The solar ETF has continued to hold this breakout, but it's not pushing up from these levels. There's a lot of uncertainty about the supply of polysilicon. And then when we think about the wind sector, well, it's going to be, I think, rather difficult to sell wind farms when the wind is demonstrably not blowing. But it's at least holding this 20 level, and provided it can hold the lows from this week, there's the potential for the short-term oversold condition to be unwound. And of course, we continue to see that copper prices remain really quite firm, and they were in positive territory again in here today and continuing to bounce from the region of the trend mean. So the profitability of wind and solar remains questionable, but the dedication of politicians to electrify the transportation fleet remains very considerable. Of course, they haven't really answered yet where all the new electricity is going to come from, but they certainly want people to buy more electric vehicles and recharge electric vehicles, even if there's no electricity to recharge them. And obviously, the irony of this won't be lost in anybody. But it's certainly bullish for copper, and copper prices remain really quite firm. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.